Welcome now to the Midday for a Friday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and tonight at 7:30 at the Capitol Theater in Madison, music will be in the air, quite a variety of it, too, with an underlying theme, you might say, and that theme being the recorder. There will be works by Telemann and a contemporary composer, David Bedford, both featuring prominently the recorder. Also, by the way, the Brook Green Suite of Gustav Holst and the Serenade in E-flat by Joseph Suk. And the recorder parts are going to be played by my guest. And welcome to the Midday, Pierce Adams.
Thank you very much.
Has come over from England to perform here with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. And are those two works now, as I've said a couple of times already, in case it's not already apparent, that the recorder, we hear it often in Renaissance music and certainly in the music of Telemann and his contemporaries, but you have apparently brought it full force into contemporary music too.
Yeah, I'm certainly not the first person to do that. I think, you know, contrary to what most people might imagine, there's been more music written for the recorder since it was revived in the middle years of the last century than was ever written before. It's really got a completely elevated status to the status it had in the 18th century, when there was just a small handful of virtuoso works and great players. But
and is it an instrument that plays well in its native state, you might say, to a large hall?
You know, that's always been one of the problems with the recorder. I mean, it was built and designed for the period, for the venues they would have played in, you know, probably much smaller venues, wood-panelled drawing rooms and so on, when you've kind of got a natural amplification. So, you know, what we have in this century is a sort of an attempt at being authentic. You know, we're going to try and play as the composers intended, but you're battling against it because we're playing in thoroughly inauthentic situations, large concert halls and so on. So it's a battle, but it's something that I think that we recorder players are winning little by little, particularly with the help of a bit of innovative recorder design.
Well, yeah, and we'll get into the design a little bit later, or perhaps even now in the context of this first piece. Well, here, you commissioned this piece, didn't you, from David Bedford?
That's right, yeah.
Concerto, the recorder concerto that you'll be playing tonight, and typically it has three movements, but is this a work that works best for a more contemporary designed recorder?
Well, this particular piece, because it's pitting the recorder against obviously a modern string orchestra, and it uses, in fact, five movements. It starts off on a bass recorder and works its way up through the instruments to a sopranino at the end. So by the time you get to the end, we're cutting through absolutely fine, but the bass and the tenor need a little help, so we're going to have some sound reinforcement for that in the show.
But that's an interesting progression. I mean, it's an old, of course, Renaissance tradition that you'll see the recorder player, you know, picking up various instruments during the course of a performance. Mm-hmm. But I've never heard of it being done in sequence like that.
Yeah, no, it was just the idea that this composer had, and he thought that would be a really nice idea.
And so in this final movement we will hear?
We're on to a sopranino recorder. The movements sort of fade one into another, so I'm not even sure where the pickup point is on your CD there. But
And which orchestra is this?
This is the BBC Symphony Orchestra from London. Thank you.
my guest today, Piers Adams, soloing with the BBC Symphony Orchestra performance. That was the finale, the fifth of the five movements of David Bedford's recorder concerto that was commissioned by Piers and works its way up through from low to high. I guess, is that kind of a good thing in the long run? You progress toward the instruments that need the least wind to blow them by the time you get to the end of the
Yeah, concert. Something like that. It definitely gives a feeling of increasing excitement as the pitch gets higher and higher and the music gets faster and faster. So, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds almost dizzying before you get to the end of that. So you brought some recorders.
Yep.
We broke a whole bunch of them, in fact, and we won't hear from a lot of them because I don't know what it's actually going to sound like in our temporary studio. It might be bouncing all over the walls, but it would be interesting nonetheless to hear about and hear from some of them.
Yeah.
So you have one here that's close to a yard long.
Longer than, I would say. Yeah, this is the bass recorder. So this is where I start on the concerto. They've got a nice woody tone at the bottom here. Excuse me.
Sort of sound like a didgeridoo or something.
Yeah, totally didgeridoo, yeah.
Okay, so that's the bass recorder.
Yeah.
And was that an instrument that would have existed in some of the Renaissance?
Oh, for sure, yeah. Uh-huh. Bass recorder, great bass recorder, contrabass recorder, twice as long as that. They were all part of the Renaissance recorder consort, but never envisaged as a solo instrument. So this is probably one of the first uses of it in that context.
We don't get into concertos really till the Baroque era for a solo instrument in orchestra, by which time they're all like sopranino or some of the smaller ones.
Yeah.
And Vivaldi only wrote maybe half a dozen
concertos? Yeah, something like that. He wrote three concertos for the sopranino recorder, mm-hmm. which are probably the most virtuosic works mm-hmm. that the instrument had up to the end of that of the Baroque period. So the fantastic piece.
So what's next here? You have one.
So we're going up, yeah, this is a tenor recorder, lovely mellow.
Sounds like a folk song.
That is a folk song.
Lovely.
Neil Gow's Lament. And, yeah, then we get up to the alto record or treble record, we call it in England. This is like sort of the main solo instrument. And so that's this instrument was known as the flute. You call this one the flute, or the common flute, English flute, and what we now call a flute, which you blow sideways,
sure,
is called the transverse flute or German flute or Querflöte.
Yes. So people who play the flauta are flautists, but people who play the flute are flutists?
Yeah, we have a totally different language, I'm afraid. And you have recorderists here. Yeah, we don't have that.
What are they in England?
We don't have a word for it.
You don't have a word for it?
We just recorder players. We should invent one. I don't know what. Yeah, and in Holland, they've renamed the recorder the block flute because you get so much stick from the association with kids playing in elementary school that they wanted to kind of rebrand it as a completely new instrument. So you're a block flutist in Holland.
Yeah. Sounds a little like an insult, but I'm sure that the term will continue to catch on. Yeah. Now, what is this Eagle recorder that we've heard about, though?
Okay, so this is, you talked about the bigger concert halls, and, there have been various attempts over the last few decades, I guess. So in fact, really right the way back from the time that the recorder died out, 1750s or whatever, pretty much gone into obscurity by then. And then, of course, you had the growth of the orchestra, and all the other instruments went through a period of transition and new instrument technology, bigger ranges, louder, keys were added and so
chromatic,
on.
Chromatic, yeah.
And the recorder pretty much missed out on all of this. Except actually there was a little pocket of enthusiasts over in Vienna and they developed an instrument which was known as the Schakan, which was essentially a recorder with a few keys on.
What did they do with it?
They played Viennese salon music.
It's
nice stuff, actually. I've dug a lot of it out. I've even recorded some of it, and it's very charming, very light, frothy music. But then, you know, it kind of disappeared again. And then in the 20th century, again, people had another go at building a modernised recorder. At the same time as you had the historical revival, you had a few woodwind companies, particularly in Germany, trying to, again, add keys and so on. And there have been a number of attempts. But this is the latest one anyway. It's called the Eagle Recorder, made by a very talented Dutch woman called Adriana Breukink.
And it's actually just about the smallest of the ones that we've seen so far here.
Well, it's an alto again. I mean, mm-hmm. she makes an alto and a soprano, but the alto being the main size. But she's got, I mean, obviously you can't see it on the radio, can you? But I'm staring at it. It's heavy. It's made of black wood. It's fat. So whereas a Baroque recorder bore... it is much thinner. This is a much wider, wider bore, more like the earlier Renaissance instruments, which were louder. It's got some keys on the bottom, and it means it's got very loud bottom notes, which a normal alto recorder, you can barely hear it at the bottom, and it's got a slightly extended range. And so I'm actually using this to play a Telemann concerto tonight, because we're in a big concert hall, and it cut through fantastically.
Well, you know, music was constantly in Telemann's age, too, being invented and reinvented and reinterpreted. Sure. It's always been a living thing, so why not?
Yeah, I think and hope that the composers would approve of that, and in fact would be somewhat befuddled by our attempts just to do things exactly as they used to do them with their very limited resources.
Well, that's true, too. That's been a long, ongoing debate, too. Even Mahler got into that one at one point, but... it's always going to be impossible to recreate exactly the sound of those earlier performances.
It is, and you know, because we have no recordings to go on, so we don't know what we're creating. All we've got are the words people describing, and you can interpret words in any way you like. And of course, what we tend to forget is that you have a whole range of characters nowadays. We have much more flamboyant musicians, more serious musicians. Of course, you had exactly the same back in the 18th century. So you get, I mean, a classic example is a description. An English musician traveled to Venice and he heard Vivaldi playing. And he wrote about it afterwards. He said it was far too fast. It was dizzying playing. It made him feel a bit weird, and he didn't enjoy it at all. So, you know, which one are we going to go with? Are we going to go with someone saying, don't play music fast, or someone who actually was playing it at lightning speed?
Well, yes, and a lot of Vivaldi today is played at lightning speed, too.
Yeah.
Although, just a quick side note, as the founder of that group Red Priest, were you of the school of playing Vivaldi fast? I can't remember. We have played Red Priest before.
Yeah, I mean, we came out of the sort of period instrument movement in England, which had become, you know, after its initial explosion of excitement in the 60s and 70s, it became very standardised. Sort of the recording business took over and started telling everybody what to do and what was right and what was wrong. So we wanted to move away from that. And at the same time, there were some very wonderful Italian groups, a particular one called Il Giardino Armonico.
Yes.
And they were playing Vivaldi with incredible energy, speed, vitality. So we were very inspired by that and wanted to do something a bit like that in England. So that was kind of the inspiration for forming the group.
When the recorder starts smoking, however, you're probably going too fast.
Well, you know, I did actually. We once did a show where I actually had to blow some flames out of the end of the recorder. So, although they weren't very impressive flames, the reviewer said that Mick Jagger wouldn't even have used it to light his cigarette. So,
well, you know, again, you're constantly experimenting. You have to. That's part of the living medium. But let's go back to Dario Castello then. When I say back, I mean back in time. And this is from a CD that you produced when?
We recorded this about 3 or 4 years ago. It's called Wild Men of the Seicento. And it's all fantastic, kind of crazy 17th century music.
And there was a lot.
It was a mad period in music making, really exciting. And it's kind of been a bit sidelined, because once you get to the mainstream, you know, Bach, Vivaldi, Handel, that's where people think the Baroque is. But actually, you know, you go back to 50-100 years before that, and there were some...
Imitating animal sounds, that Carlo Farina,
I don't know if you're...
There was some pretty crazy stuff. You would think it's avant-garde for today,
precisely.
So what's going on in this Castello piece then?
So Castello, he was the master of wind in San Marco Cathedral in Venice, and he was a proponent of what they call the stile moderno, the modern style, and this is a kind of very flamboyant operatic style of composition where you never quite know what's going to happen next.
And who are you playing with?
This is with David Wright. He's my harpsichord cohort in Red Priest.
but it's some pretty wild stuff from Dario Castello, and that was what, let's see, Sonata Secunda, and featuring, which recorder then did you play on this one, Pierce?
That was, and I'm struggling to remember what I actually used, that was an alto recorder pitched in G, a tone higher than a normal alto, but it wasn't a particularly historic instrument, it was a semi-modern instrument. Not the Eagle, though.
Not the Eagle. No. How long has the Eagle been around? That's heavy blackwood.
It's been around for 5 or 6 years. It's been kind of constantly developed. I spent a lot of time sitting in the maker's workshop and sort of, you know, trying to work out ways to make it work. Because it records, I mean, like any instrument, it's a sort of intrinsically flawed design. You know, you prove something and something else goes. But, but you know, to get all that volume and to get the reliability has been quite a challenge for her.
Well, so many instruments look improbable. I mean,
sure.
Last time you opened up a piano, you're like, how could this thing ever work?
It's a box of tricks, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite a box of tricks, that's right. And occasionally, sometimes they don't work, too. But so is there a frontier for you now in terms of, I mean, you're traveling so much, you're going to be playing in Nottingham in a couple of weeks and then throughout the UK, looks like, for quite a while. But what is the project of note for you at the moment?
I've got a lot of different things running at the moment, actually. I've got, with my group, Red Priest, we've been going 22 years now, so we've having completed one project called the Baroque Bohemians, mixing Baroque and Gypsy, we're now...
Oh, what fun.
Yeah, we're now onto a Truly Madly Baroque, which is more of a back to roots programme with some blockbusters like Brandenburg 5 and... Tartini Devil's Trill and so on. So kind of running. That's nearly ready to record
As a recorder concerto.
It's a quartet. Well, we're a quartet with recorder, violin, cello, harpsichord, and everything is thoroughly arranged. So it's kind of Baroque crossover.
So the violinist doesn't steal the show then?
Yeah. No, it's a battle between us. We have a duel on stage. Okay. But aside from that, yeah, I'm carrying on with various solo projects. And actually, I've got another very interesting thing, which is about to be released, which we've called Bach's Side of the Moon, which is a recorder and synthesizer turning Baroque music into kind of electronic relaxation music. It sounds
going
a bit weird, but it
sounds a bit like Wendy Carlos
yep.
from back in the day.
Exactly, but it's a sort of, you know, it's a slightly different take on it, but it's along those lines.
The thing about Bach, though, I mean, and Ton Koopman made this point years ago when I talked to him. The thing with Bach is you can do all kinds of the music. Things to the music or with the music, and it's still there. But with other composers, and use this interesting phrase, it's away.
Yeah,
it's, you know, doesn't work with just any composer.
It doesn't work with just any composer. You have to pick pieces carefully. And I think the thing about Bach is it's so kind of, you know, almost mathematically perfect, isn't it? So whatever you play it on, you're hearing that perfection, that music of the spheres. Where I think other music is often more contextual.
Yeah, I think that's. I think you put your finger right on it. And now just one more from Pierce Adams before he takes off. He's playing tonight with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. He's playing the Telemann Concerto, and then a concerto that he himself commissioned by David Bedford and has recorded some time ago now. And also on the program, music of Holst and Joseph Suk. That's tonight at 7:30 Capitol Theater in Madison, the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. And before you take off, Pierce, about Ignaz Bieber, I should say, Franz von Bieber, quite the avant-garde composer in his time, which was the late 17th century.
It was, yeah. I think he took this idea. I mean, the music of Costello we heard a bit earlier was very kind of free and flamboyant, and he kind of took that to its logical conclusion. And I think after the time of Bieber, then the madness sort of kind of calmed down a little bit, you know, and we get into the high Baroque and the traditional sonatas. But Bieber took this idea of just musical craziness to its limit. And now this is a violin sonata, and I've often wanted to play some Bieber, but you know, it's not easy fitting the stuff onto the recorder because it's got a big range. But the Eagle recorders really help with that. And I even have a go at a bit of double stopping at the end.
Here we go.